The machines really are coming for us.
Technology alone is not enough. Is technology married with liberal arts, married with the humanities, that yields us the results that make our heart sing?
Hello, Emily Wright.
Hi, Sam McClary.
How are you?
I'm good, thank you.
I feel like we haven't been in this room together for some time.
I know, it's so sad.
Yeah.
But I also feel like we haven't really, you know, been able to look into each other's eyes for even longer because of all the dangly bits. By that, I mean the microphones that were a little bit in the way.
They were. All you could see was some glasses, maybe a corner of some glasses. But now, dangly bits have turned around and now pointing up.
They're pointing up, yes. Standing to attention. And, so it's good to be able to see you now.
Ah, well, the feeling is mutual.
Is it?
Well. So last week you had the lovely Amber Ralton here, and you were talking, we had a little repeat show last week, which was in honour, I suppose, of gender pay gap reporting deadlines. So hopefully everyone listened to that and has also listened to our special podcast we put together on the gender pay gap, which featured Kieran Bird from CBRE, Jerry Hughes from GVA and Emma Carriaga from British Land. So if you haven't listened to that, go listen to it.
I'm glad that that was done because it was a bit weird doing that particular... I mean, it was great to have Amber in here, but it was a bit weird to do it without you, particularly because of the subject matter and the fact that you were, you know, leading all of our content really on that.
I was just buried in a spreadsheet, Emily, which, you know, is...
That sounds like my least favourite place to be.
Yeah, it was mine too. And we'll talk about spreadsheets a little bit later.
Great, I might leave now.
Yeah. but we are back to all things tech. This episode of Tech Talk Radio. So end of last week, I went along to a talk by the one and only Mr. Anthony Slumbers, your friend and mine, Caleb Parker of Bold. So Caleb with the lovely
accent.
Yeah. He was delivering or putting on a session at Headspace, actually, down in Hatton Garden. So that was quite cool there with Anthony, who was talking about or giving some advice on how to keep your job when the AI take over. So it was an audience filled with the Twitterati. So lots of activity on there. And also your friend and mine, Daryl Colthrust, was there, you know, sort of really getting himself into this industry and learning about how we view tech in the prop world.
He's so enthusiastic, and that sounds like a bit of a patronising thing to say, but it's really not, because it's so good to have somebody coming in from other sectors, and he's worked in so many sectors, and genuinely be really excited about property, because I think that sometimes even the real estate professionals in property can get a bit jaded. So it's brilliant to have such a, you know, someone who's so excited about it.
Absolutely. And, you know, it was an audience full of excitement and questions, and there are people want to learn.
And I'm so glad people are asking questions at events now.
I know.
Oh, how many panels have you chaired when nobody's had a question?
It's like tumbleweed.
Yeah. Well, it's good there's questions. It means that people want answers.
Yeah.
So I'm pleased.
Yeah. And that they've been listening, which is always helpful.
And a surprise.
So we'll let you get straight into Anthony. It is a recording of two parts, so you will hear us in the middle. As I should also apologise, I suppose, for the sound quality, as Anthony was not here in the studio. As I say, it was at Headspace, so recorded from a podium. So apologies that he doesn't sound quite as wonderful as Emily and I. But here he is telling you how the AI are going to take our jobs.
Right, so what are we going to talk about? We're going to talk about, will AI eliminate CRE jobs? So will artificial intelligence eliminate corporate or commercial jobs? And the answer, because we're going to skip straight to the answer, is, as the lovely Vicky Pollard would say, yes but no but yes. Because it's actually going to, as we'll see, it's not going to be so much jobs that are eliminated, but it's jobs to be done are going to be eliminated. Now, the reason it goes from yes but no but yes is actually, this is from McKinsey, January last year. Overall, we estimate that 49% of the activities that people are paid to do in the global economy have the potential to be automated by adapting currently demonstrated technology. That's the thing. The two key things are that it's activities, not jobs. So it's the jobs to be done, not the jobs. And it's by adapting currently demonstrated technology. So this is sort of ready to go now. Or if you want to be more specific about it, this is from the RICS, the impact of emerging technologies on the surveying profession from July last year. Surveying appears to be an industry in which 88% of the core tasks are ripe for automation to a greater or lesser degree. So why is this happening? Now, it's not only because of AI, but AI has a huge weight behind it that is leading this. If you look at this, this is the evolution of Moore's Law. You probably all know Moore's Law. Effectively, it's talking about the number of transistors on a chip can double every 2 years, so you're doubling the power of a chip every 2 years. Now, what is absolutely extraordinary here, if you look here, 1980, we're talking about 100,000 chips, transistors on a chip, 1980. Just move that forward to 2000, we're up to 100 million. So we've gone from 100,000 to 100 million in just 20 years. And then, if you go from 2000, this just takes us through to 2016, we're up to 10 billion. So in just 36 years, go from 100,000 to 10 billion. So this stuff is scaling. This is the exponential curve that everyone keeps going on about. And it's absolutely extraordinary the way this is developing, except it's not that extraordinary because there's something going much, much faster than Moore's Law. Moore's Law is based on CPUs, computer processing units, which are the chips that go in normal PCs. GPUs, graphic processor units, are the chips that are used in gaming machines, all the World of Warcraft and all that sort of stuff. They use GPUs. As it happens, and this is a pure stroke of fate, artificial intelligence needs what's called parallel processing, which is exactly what GPUs do. Instead of on a normal computer, everything is done one thing after another, effectively. With GPUs, you do hundreds and thousands of things at the same time. This is why it's all gone completely nuts over the last few years. It's essentially a function of computing power. What that means, and if you look again here from 2015 to 2016, neural network training, because you have to train artificial intelligence on data, has got 60 times faster in just three years. 60 times faster in 3 years, which is why things like computer vision have gone from useless to a utility. So if you just go back to 2010, computer vision had an error rate of about 28%. So the computer would know, would make about 28 errors per 100 when it was looking at things. As of, 2015, it's at 3.5%. Humans are at 5%. So you've gone this incredible jump from just 2012, from 16 down to 3.5 in a matter of a few years. So computer vision has gone from effectively being useless to a utility. That's why you can get things like this. This is a thing called style transfer. This is where you take one image and you restyle it in the style of another. So this is just a picture being redone in the style of The Simpsons. Now, just to explain as an example of why this stuff is good, how this stuff is moving so fast. This is from the year August 2015 to September 2016. In August 2015, they could do this process of taking one image and doing it in the style of another, at a rate of 4,000th of a frames per second. That's in August 2015. By March 2016, it was up to 4.7. By June of the same year, a couple of months later, it's at to one frame a second on a phone. And by September of that year, it was at 15 to 30 frames a second on a phone. And that's all in the space of just a little bit over a year. That's what happens when you get 60 times the power of neural network training. So it gives you a really good indication of how incredibly fast this stuff is all developing, which is why in 2013, if you pointed the state-of-the-art computer vision process at the photograph that we're going to see in a minute, all it could see was there's three people. That's all it could tell you in 2013. By 2016, very famous photo this, it could tell you that was a policeman approaching, a policeman grabbing, and a woman standing. Within 3 years, it's gone from not being really that useful to incredibly, incredibly useful. So you think, well, in that case, what are we? We're human-machine parity, are we? Well, actually, we're not at human-machine parity. Unfortunately, they really won this war because they can do this 200,000 times simultaneously in real time. So they can do better than us, hundreds of thousands of times faster than us. Which also means why speech recognition, this is why Alexa is all over the place now, because speech recognition has actually moved even faster than computer vision. So you've gone from the way speech recognition works is people talk about word error rates, the number of word errors per 100. In 2013, there was a 23% word error rate in the best speech recognition program. By 2017, it was actually down to under 5%, and 5% is again the human level. So again, it's gone from 2013, just a couple of years ago, where it was effectively useless, to being a utility, which is why, oops, you get fake news.
So, if you had been at the event, what you would have seen right now is a really crazily good bit of fake Obama footage. It was scarily good.
I don't know if I understand even half of that sentence.
So there was a video with Obama talking about, I can't even remember what it was now, but I think he was talking about health, and Obama never said any of it. It was all done by an AI that just captured his mouth and sort of reprogrammed a computer to talk for Obama, and then had someone who was impersonating his voice. It was crazy. It looked like real news, but it was fake news.
Wow.
Crazy.
Wow. That's scary, isn't it?
Really scary. But because people can't see what happens on a podcast, I thought I would steal this opportunity to deliver a bit of real news, not fake news.
Oh, I thought you were going to match to an impression.
Oh, no, I can't do it.
Oh, well.
I'm sorry. So the real news is that this month, in fact, in a couple of days, EG launches its own piece of tech.
Yes.
Do you know what it is, Emily Wright?
I do, and if I didn't, I'm sure I'd be shot on the spot, but yes. I do, of course.
It is, of course, Radius Data Exchange, which is a powerful data sharing platform that we have created with the agency community. So it's with them for the agents to unlock maximum value from data. As you and I both know, the agency market has been demanding more complete, more accurate and timely data. And that sort of high quality data that enables them to do more business, do it faster, ultimately make some more money, I would have thought. So we have answered and delivered and will be delivering very soon Radius Data Exchange, which we believe is the future of real estate data. So that's the future of real estate data. What is the future of real estate? Or just the future? Anthony will come up and tell us next.
So. I thought you were asking me, and I'm thinking, I don't have those answers. I don't know. I wasn't expecting this on this podcast, but I'm very glad that someone else
is. Do you want to try? What is the future?
The future? No, I don't want to try. That's a really big question.
No.
I was going to say something silly, as per, but I think people have had enough of me saying stupid things.
That is like a perfect crossover to Pastor Anthony, who doesn't say stupid things sometimes.
Well done, Anthony.
Yeah. So next up, he goes straight into talking about Lisa Doll, who is I've never heard of this game Go. Have you?
What?
It's like a game called Go. Even Roland's.
We're looking over at the person who's still in their 20s.
Oh, he does.
And he's nodding. Right.
Millennial,
okay.
He's nodding. So Lisa Doll is this amazing player of this game Go. And Anthony talks about he got his butt royally kicked by an AI, and then how the AI gets its butt kicked by another AI. So, let's just hear him talk about Go.
This is Lisa Doll, 2016, the greatest player ever of the Asian game Go. Go is order of magnitudes more complicated than chess. There's supposed to be more options in a Go game than there are atoms in the universe. Got taken on by AlphaGo, which was developed by DeepMind, which is a subsidiary of Google. Dennis Hassabis, the chap who runs DeepMind, did this as a test to see. He thought they were 10 years off beating Lee Sedol. And they beat him. They beat him 10 years ahead of time. But then actually Lee Sedol got his sort of revenge served up, because in technology you're never a winner for very long. So AlphaGo beats Lee Sedol in March 2016. And then in October 2017, a year and a bit later, AlphaGo Zero is launched, son of AlphaGo. And after 3 days practice, it beats AlphaGo 100-0. AlphaGo before took months and months and had to play hundreds of millions of games of Go to be able to beat Lee Sedol. This little sod beat him in 300-0 after 3 days. And then a month later, AlphaGo Zero takes up chess. And it trains at chess for 4 hours, and it beats Stockfish. And Stockfish is the number one computer chess program. So, okay, it's not Terminator, but it's not the little chappy falling on the floor either. So, point taken. AI is good at games. Well, so what? Big deal. But it's not big deal, because what this means is the nature of work itself is changing. The actual work that we will all be doing as humans is changing. Effectively, anything that is structured, repeatable, or predictable, and that's the 49% of all tasks and the 88% of surveying, is going to be automated. And this has huge implications. Now, what you need to sort of back up a little bit here to understand why all this stuff is getting automated so quickly. Well, it's because AI is... has been focused on five areas ever since. AI was first mentioned at a conference at Dartmouth College in 1956, which was set up as the Artificial Intelligence Conference. It's the first mentioning of it. And funny enough, at that time, they thought they were going to crack AI by pulling together a group of people over the summer between terms. But ever since then, AI research has been focused on five areas. So it's really important to understand what AI is good at, because there's things it's good at and things it's not good at. First of all, it's very good about knowledge about the world. It's very good at synthesizing information. It's very good at taking lots of different pieces of data and synthesizing them, which is why it is so good for use in consumer or customer targeting, why it's so good at marketing, and why it's so good at advertising, because it can pull information and understand who a customer is. It's very, very good at reasoning, deductive, inductive, abductive. It's good at all of them. If this, then that. However complicated you want to get with if this, then that, AI is really good at it. So it's really, really good for asset management, compliance, document analysis, application processing, is all straight in the crosshairs of what AI is good at. Planning, for setting goals and how to achieve them, it's also very good. If I need to get there, what information, what do I need to do to get there? So it's really good for logistics, predictive maintenance. How do I know when that chiller's going to break down, or the lights are going to fail, or whatever, and how do I stop that? It's very, very good at that. It's very, very good at demand forecasting. And the whole point about forecasting is really important, because what is happening is effectively the price of prediction, which is what demand forecasting is coming down and down and down. So, and the number of things that we can apply it to is getting wider, wider and wider. So it's going to become ever more easy to be able to predict the future across many different domains. And then you have communication and perception. So just knowledge, reasoning, planning, communication and perception. Communication is all to do about understanding written and spoken language, which is why, as I say, why we're getting Alexa everywhere, why we get Siri, why we've got Cortana, why we're going to get the use of chatbots in customer support and voice control of the world around us. As we've seen, it's something that AI is really, really good at. And it's really, really good at perception. It's really good at understanding imagery, sounds, and other sensory inputs. So you need to think in terms of AI can now look at the built environment and can understand what it's looking at and what's happening with the built environment, because it can understand imagery, sounds, and other inputs. So that leads me on. I think there's probably 17 main areas of real estate that AI is going to have a lot of impact in, from investment strategy to price optimization, customer segmentation, compliance, and all this sort of stuff. But I haven't got time for that, but it's clearly used across lots of different things. Now, have you noticed what's missing in all of that? There's something missing in all of this very clever, structured, repeatable, predictable stuff. Creation itself is missing. Before anything can be made structured, repeatable, predictable, it has to be created in the first part, in the first instance. And we're really lucky, you know, because computers are bloody rubbish at that, and we're really, really good at it. This is obviously, this is from the ceiling of the Sistine Chapel by Michelangelo over 500 years ago. No machine is going to be able to get to create like that, or certainly not for a very, very long time. So that's what's missing. Picasso, you need an artist, you see, to tell you about technology. Computers are useless. They only give you answers, but that's exactly the point. In terms, you know, the job here is to, how do we make sure we don't get eliminated by AI? Well, you do what the AI is not good at. Computers are useless. They only give you answers. Now, if you flip around all this sort of angst about changing work and whatever, if you think of it this way, I'm now thinking structured, repeatable, predictable stuff is all going to be automated, but that's old work. Someone else can do that. We can offload all that because we're humans and we're not robots. What we're really good at and what the work is that we need to do, we need to increase our skills when it comes to design, imagination, inspiration, creation, empathizing, intuition, innovation, collaboration, and social intelligence. This is how you avoid being eliminated by AI. You don't play the same game as it is. So there are three factors which are really going to determine the chance of being eliminated, replaced by new technology. First, it boils down to uniqueness. Innovation is so, so important, and it's something I certainly think within the real estate industry we need to regroup and rework our commitment to innovation, because if you're not new, if you're not innovative, you are going to get swamped. Social intelligence, that's all this stuff, design, empathizing, being a good listener, being a good leader, being a good manager, being a good team player, being a good human, is social intelligence. This is stuff you cannot code. And likewise, where humans really score is we can deal with complex objects in an unstructured environment. We can easily adapt to changing landscapes. If you take that AlphaGo computer and you asked it to play checkers, it wouldn't know where to start. Computers are really, really good at being aimed in a direction and being optimized for a particular direction. Humans are very, very good at dealing with complex objects in an unstructured environment. So those three factors are really, really important. Nesta, the innovation charity, did a really good report a couple of years ago called Creativity Versus Robots. And essentially, it's saying without creativity, we genuinely are in trouble. The US, as it turns out, is actually, as an economy, a lot less creative than the UK. So they reckon 47% of US jobs are at high risk of computerization, because they split something like 2,000 jobs into high, medium, or low risk. And they found actually the US is in real problems, which is actually quite interesting. This was from a couple of years ago, and you think, well, how the hell did Trump get into the White House? It's because a lot of those 47% of US jobs are being squeezed, and it's already coming out of the woodwork. But it's only 35% in UK, because actually 24% of UK jobs are what they deem creative. Now, creative covers a myriad of things. So, you know, there's creativity in all those 17 areas that I was talking about, and all the things that computers are good at. There's still plenty of creativity in there, but it goes from sort of low, medium, and high creativity, and the UK actually has a lot of very high creativity jobs. So in those, in the creative jobs in the UK, is 87% of them are low risk from digitization. So going back to dear old Vicky, you know, she's right. Yes, but no, but yes. Jobs aren't necessarily going, but tasks are going, activities are going, break jobs up into component parts, and a lot of stuff is changing. And again, it's obligatory in my talks, you have to get a Bob Dylan photograph in there, because look out, kids, you're going to get hit. Even though there's lots of mitigating factors in there, look out, kids, you're going to get hit. Stuff is definitely changing very, very fast. So we've had the what and the so what. Here's the now what. Here's the how to avoid being eliminated by AI. And of course, Mr. Jobs actually had the answer. This is from 2011. This was at the launch of the iPad 2 and the famous now image that's been used all over the place, the intersection of technology and the liberal arts. It's in Apple's DNA that technology alone is not enough. Is technology married with liberal arts, married with the humanities, that yields us the results that make our heart sing? If Michelangelo was alive today, he would have worked for Steve Jobs. Well, actually, Steve Jobs would have worked for Michelangelo. Garry Kasparov, of course, probably the greatest chess player of his time, whether he's the greatest chess player of all time, who knows, but he was the greatest chess player. And he was the first grandmaster, the first world champion to be beaten by a computer program. He was obviously beaten in the end of the 90s by IBM's Deep Blue, or Big Blue, call it Deep Blue, I think. But after that, he realised once they'd lost once, they were always going to lose, because it was only a matter of time as the machines got... Chess is a very brute force business. It's just a pure computing thing. So the more power computers had, the more inevitable it was they were always going to beat humans. But he started a thing called advanced chess, which is also known as centaur chess. You know, centaur, the marriage of a human and an animal. And what he found, so his advanced chess, you take a computer program with a player, sometimes two, sometimes you have pairs, and they would play another computer program with another pair. So one or two people plus chess program play another one or two people who are chess player. Or you get the chess player, the humans and the computer, and they play the best chess machine. And actually, a human plus a computer always beats a machine on its own. But what was really interesting, he found that a weak human plus a machine plus a better process was superior to a strong computer on its own. But more remarkably, was superior to a strong human and a machine and an inferior process. So you take the person with the computer, and they had a methodology. They'd worked out how to exploit the skills and the ability of the machine, how to leverage that to coincide with their own intellects. And he found that the people who worked out the best process, the best method of enabling themselves to be augmented by a machine, they always won. Despite, you know, so it's still a little bit like David and Goliath. You can get the smaller people with a less powerful machine, but a better process, a better understanding of how to meld man and machine. Man and machine wins. So we're down to four essential ways to avoid best getting eliminated by AI. Rule number one, do not stay in a repeatable job. If your job is repeatable in any way, if not necessarily doing exactly the same thing every day, but doing a variant on the same thing every day, do not stay in it. This is an analogy that I stole from the brilliant Benedict Evans, who works for A16Z Venture Capitalists. This is a still from the wonderful Jack Lemmon film, The Apartment, from 1960. And he said with this image, if you think about it, each one of these desks with someone on it doing something repeatable and predictable is almost like the cell in a spreadsheet. So he said, effectively, in 1960s, an office essentially was Excel. It was lots of people doing repeatable things, cells in a spreadsheet. But rule number one, do not stay in a repeatable job. Right, this is the hard slide to get through. This is the really important one. Because, as I say, what you have to do in an ideal world, you need to understand what artificial intelligence is good at and what it is not good at. And there's a process to go through how you can exploit artificial intelligence. So rule number one is understand what it's good for and what it is not. So the good for is that knowledge, reasoning, planning, communication, perception. Then you need to look within your business for use cases. So good starting point is that RICS report, where it breaks it down to 88% of the core tasks. But that is core tasks over 10 years. So they split the surveying industry effectively into 42 work streams, and they see which parts of it are amenable to technology today and which parts are amenable to technology within 10 years. I always say to people, what you need to do is you need to look at the ones that are high chance of being fully susceptible to or amenable to artificial intelligence in 10 years, and then try and do it in 4 years. Because whoever gets there first is going to win. So look for the use cases. Look for places where you can leverage what AI is good at. Then you need to think about, are these commonplace and repeatable within your business and or applicable to many of your customers? So you're looking for something that you either do a lot of or your customers do a lot of. Because if it's something you do a lot of, we want to eliminate that. And if it's something your customers do a lot, if you can eliminate that for them, there's money in them there, Hills. Do you have or can you obtain large quantities of data? Super important that AI does not work without lots of data. There are caveats to that, but essentially AI does not work without lots of data. So you need to be able to work out, do we already have this data in some form or another? I mean, in the property industry, you've probably got it in about 400 different databases repeating the same stuff. So at some stage, we've got to get all this stuff together. Or we're going to need to bring in other data sources. So just think of things like a building. Weather has a big impact on the building. So really, we should be pulling weather information into our building control systems and that sort of thing. So do you have this data? And if you don't have it, can you get it from someone? And then are there clear metrics by which you could judge success? Again, with artificial intelligence, you're essentially creating, most of the time, you're creating a hypothesis and then telling it whether it got it right. So you throw in all this information and you say, tell me if that's a cat. And it does all its stuff and it comes out and it goes, dog. And you go, no, wrong, try again. Banana. No, wrong, try again. And what it does is it changes the way it looks at all the different data sources and the weights it gives to bits of the data as it analyzes it, until eventually it works out what it needs to know to go dog, dog. That's really, really important. And you need those clear metrics, because you know this is the science side of life. You need to know what it is you're trying to do and whether you're getting there. And then, of course, if you have all the above, is there any money in it? You know, because there's lots of things we could do, and lots of things that we could do which would be quite fun, but, you know, either no one cares. Actually, probably no one cares if it's a one-off, what you don't really want. I mean, there's some one-offs that you could throw AI at to get rid of forever. But really, you're looking for repeatable stuff. You're looking for stuff that has a high value, either for you or for your customers in some way, or other stakeholders. Anything that can remove friction or enable discovery. So remove friction in the sense of anything that you can make easier to do than it is at the moment. Can we apply AI to do that? And discovery, anything where you can set up something that will enable X person to have the right information at the right time in the right place. So you need to go through all of those. And then once you get your head around the knowledge, planning, reasoning, perception, communication, you start saying, yeah, well, in that case, that's what it's good at. So, and if something doesn't fit into those, think, well, you need some other technology. And number three, This is stolen, stealing lots of my ideas tonight. This is stolen from a wonderful Swiss chap called Gerd Leonard. And he talks about, in a world of exponential technology, we need to become exponentially human, which goes back to the Michelangelo thing and what machines are good at and what humans are good at, and creation, social intelligence, uniqueness is what we really need to be good at. And, you know, you need to train yourself. Train yourself for this. You know, you can make yourself a better listener. You can make yourself a better learner. You can make yourself a better leader. It's an exercise. How do you become like Vitruvian Man for Leonardo? You know, he learned everything. He learned absolutely everything. So education goes into this as well. It's not a marathon. It is a marathon. It's not a sprint. It's a continuous learning process. You look at how all this technology is changing, and you realise the old idea, you go on, you do your O-levels, your A-levels, you go to university, you get your degree, whoopee, I'm an educated man, I don't need to read anything ever again, which is unfortunately what happens with a lot of people. That's not going to work anymore. You've got to re-educate yourself all the time, and you've got to know a broader spectrum of information. Narrow knowledge isn't really much use anymore. And then four, you've got to think, well, okay, but in my business, how is AI actually going to change the world? Because we're working from the position that all that stuff, you know, knowledge, reasoning, planning, perception, communication, is going to change the world. It's so powerful. There are going to be winners, and there are going to be losers. You know, one of the things that's interesting at the moment, you've got a company like WPP, or the big ad agencies, who built themselves up into this incredibly powerful machine that you've just got sort of three or four ad agencies around the world controlling everything. And then they find, bugger, Google and Facebook have basically taken the whole online advertising market. 60% of the whole online advertising market is Google and Facebook. 90% of all growth in the online advertising market is Google and Facebook. So you're finding all these people who built their whole business model around consolidating and having this data because they're going to have this big distribution channel that they need to deal with. Boom! That's suddenly been taken away. So you think of the same thing with, you know, newspapers. Newspapers coming and going. In America, you look at what's happened to cable TV companies. Netflix is just destroying them. So there are very much going to be winners. Winners are the people who are going to understand what all this AI can do, and then really work on becoming exponential humans, and then doing Gary Kasparov's thing of how can we put these together and leverage each other. So there really are going to be winners and losers. What about jobs? There are clearly going to be job losses. Long term, I subscribe to the usual idea of sooner or later we think of new things and everyone has new jobs. And they always say this thing about everyone came off the farm. You know, 98% of people were farming at the beginning of the 19th century. By the end of it, it's 2%. But funny enough, everyone had a job. But there was about 40 years in the middle of the 19th century where there was mass unemployment. Right? Where do you think Dickens came from? Dickens came from what happened when the first industrial revolution buggered up the job market. Now, we get through it because we adapt. Humans will always adapt, they will think of new things. But there is a gap, and there's going to be people like, I think, you know, things like advertising agencies, things like newspapers and media are going to suffer. So I think it's a really good thing to look through property portfolios, see who your customer base is, and then go, you know, how vulnerable or not are you? And I bet not many property companies actually look at it like that. They probably look at P&Ls and are they making any money? But you can make money for a long, long time and then go pop. You know, it's the I've forgotten who said it about the turkey. You know, not Voltaire, but someone like that. You know, life gets better every day for a turkey until the night before Thanksgiving, and then boom. But that's the sort of way the businesses are going to change now. This is not a gradual move. There's a slide of the percentage of the internet connected devices that Microsoft controlled in, I can't remember when it was 2010 or something like that. 2005. And in 2005, Microsoft had 95% of every device connected to the internet ran on Windows, which is why they made so much money. 5 years later, 5%. It just got absolutely killed by the phone. Phone just changed the whole dynamics of the market. So, you know, Microsoft actually, once they got rid of Jobs and they got rid of the Nutter Ballmer, has done really well, but they're a completely different company. Gates and Ballmer, Windows was everything. Windows was primacy, had absolute primacy in Microsoft. If you worked in the Windows division, you were God. Anyone else, they didn't care about. If you look at Microsoft now, Windows is an afterthought. It's all cloud and Azure and all that sort of stuff. And then you've got to think in terms of, well, in that case, how is this going to affect where we work, shop, and live? And I always work on the basis of what happens when you don't need an office to do your work and you don't need a shop to do your shop, to do your shopping. That's in terms of need. What we've got to do is change from being an industry where people needed our product to accepting they don't need our product anymore. We've got to make them want it. We've got to make our product something that they want to come to because they're doing different things that they used to do in offices. Once you've got everything structured, repeatable and predictable, gone, because the machines are doing it, what are you going to do? You're going to do all this human stuff. Do you need that workspace as a spreadsheet? Okay, that doesn't exist now, but you still go into quite a few offices where it's not that far off. So I really think in terms of the whole office market, this stuff is going to completely change the work we do, and because it changes the work we do, we're going to need spaces that are configured and have a form factor which is completely different to most places now. Likewise, shops. I think shops are just completely on the barbell. There'd be the Regent Street, the great experiential shops. There'd be Westfield. There'd be the top retailers. And then there'd be cheap and cheerful or everyday. Everything in the middle is basically going to Mr. Bezos. So what is going to happen to all this stuff in the middle? All this retail that isn't particularly cheap or suitable for the cheap end, or isn't positioned for the utility everyday market, or isn't good enough that it's a destination that makes it worthwhile me getting off my sofa. All that stuff in the middle, we've got to refactor. I actually think we're going to refactor a lot of that as offices, but again, that's for a different thing. So, wrapping up, four essentials, also known as how to ensure AI does not eliminate your job, because we're only really bothered about your job. First, do not stay in a repeatable job. Two, put the effort in to learn and understand what artificial intelligence is and how you can use it. Become an exponential human. Become a brilliant human. Become a creative human. Really put effort into developing that side. And then fourthly, think how AI and data is going to change the world, and therefore how do you need to change your business to go with it. So Heraclitus very famously said, all is flux. Said it in Greek, don't know what the Greek is, but effectively what he said is all is flux, nothing stays still. Change is everywhere, so nothing's really changed. 5th century BC, so now everything is changing. I just think it's probably changing faster now. So all is flux, nothing stays still, and the machines really are coming for us. But in business, there are some things that never, ever change. You don't need to be perfect. You just need to be better than your peers.
So there you go.
So there you go.
Oh, it took me a second to work it out. Oh.
So that is how Anthony reckons we survive the AI. Survive the Terminators? I don't know.
Oh, we're not meant to say that. Oh, we were meant to be all positive and, you know, it's not us. It's, but anyway, yeah.
As he said though, in that, you know, if you're talking about AI, you have to talk about the Terminator. It's It's just, it's written in law that you have to put up a Terminator slide.
Yeah. Mm. Well, the front of our tech magazine was basically, basically like Terminator,
yeah.
didn't it?
Yeah. It was good, though.
It was good. Well, the next one coming up soon. I can't believe it.
I know.
It's going to be two down.
Yeah. So another tech talk mag, no, sorry, another tech magazine. Yeah. Some more tech events on the way.
Yeah.
It's all going.
It
the
is.
World of
it
tech.
Is all go. So there you go.
that do you know, a gift. It was a gift. Should we go?
I think we should probably go.
Let's go.
Let's go.